You're listening to the Pulled by the Root podcast. For more information, visit us on the web at www.pulledbytheroot.com.
Hello, everyone. This is your host, Heidi Marble. It is morning time. We've had a wicked storm, but luckily we still have power. Beautiful Elle Claussen is joining me. Hi, Elle. It's so nice to have you here this morning. Our guest, she submitted a very powerful story to us, and I want to read you her bio, and then we're going to really dive in with some questions. Sabrina is an adopted person with many questions. Her story begins in Texas, where she was born and adopted illegally and abused the entire time she was with the people that adopted her. She does not claim them. Sabrina has been through many, many years of therapy and healing and has tried to reach out to the state of Texas to get her original sealed birth certificate without success. She also does not want the names of the people that adopted her on her birth certificate. She will be 40 next year, and she wants to have some answers. She does not know where to turn. Wow, Sabrina. So my first question for you, what stands out the most is the illegal adoption. Do you mind maybe starting there, and then we can build your story outward from that point?
Absolutely. So my mom died when I was 3. And my dad was still alive, but he chose not to be in the picture. My mom was remarried to this great man after she divorced my mom, and I still claim him to this day. He tried to keep me, but the state of Texas said, no, she needs to be with blood family. Still confusing. So that state put me up for adoption, and I have 8 much, much older siblings than me. Because my dad was 50 when he had me, and he had already established his family with 6 of his kids, and they were all married with children when I came along. So the state went to each of my siblings and they said, do you want her? And one by one, they're like, you know, what I was told is no, or we can't take her, or no, thank you. Until they got to one, my half sister, and she was like, kind of flippantly, okay, whatever. The story goes that her husband wanted to pursue adoption of me. And even though my stepdad that I claim that was married to my mom, he tried to adopt me and keep me. I mean, I knew his parents. I still remember his parents. They were my grandparents. So whenever I say stepdad, I'm talking about I'll use his name. His name is Dale, but I will not be using the people that adopted me. I have no claim to them whatsoever. And the state finally put me up for adoption. They were awarded temporary custody of me. Keep in mind the word temporary. They lived up north, and it was supposed to be just kind of a trial to see, okay, do we need to bring her back to my stepdad? What should we do with her? And they ended up putting me in hiding. My grandparents, for all practical purposes, my stepdad's parents, they did find us and come out there and visit. And it was kind of a front that I was in this healthy home and all this. But once they left, the people that adopted me basically, out of the blue, we had bought property on this other land and said that we're going to pack up overnight. We got a moving truck, put me and my sibling, I guess I wasn't adopted yet, their biological child, put us in a moving truck, and we randomly overnight headed way down south. And it was a very impromptu thing, and they had to like sell everything after we moved, and it was just crazy. I later found out in the last 5 years that they moved because the people who adopted me, their family started suspecting abuse at home. And I can remember it started from day one. And so when it was questioned by the man that adopted me, my half sister's husband, that's when they took off. And I was not legally adopted until 6 years after I was In temporary custody.
So let me get this straight. You felt that you found safety with your stepdad, who was not blood related to you. So this just twists and turns the stories of adopted people, doesn't it, Elle?
Oh, totally.
Because when you're thinking about family preservation, which I advocate for, it's usually go to the blood relatives first, see if somebody can keep you inside the family. But in your case, that was dangerous. You would have
Yes.
been much better off staying with somebody that you loved and trusted. So
Absolutely.
to the point that we just can't generalize. I don't know, Elle, how you feel about, that.
Well, I feel that that is a strange move to begin with because you were with your mom and her husband, who was your stepdad. You are in a safe family with someone you knew as dad. So it makes no sense to me that I know of situations where a step parent kept custody because they were parenting with the biological parent who passed or what have you. And that makes sense. You're a family. So the twists and turns of the system are what blow my mind. They say one thing out of one side of their mouth, another out of the other side. It's just, I don't know what's convenient at the time for them. And so all this garbage about what's best for the child is, it's stunning, Sabrina. I'm so sorry.
I know. I am too, Sabrina, because I can't imagine having that option of safety being withdrawn from you and what you were feeling as a small child.
Because
And
that
the
was your dad, right? Like, who takes
No,
a stepdad?
we're
I
gonna
feel
have a tantrum is what we're gonna have because
that.
we don't like any of this. And the tragedy just continued for you because you had the, was it the loss of your mother that perpetuated this huge change in your life? Can you talk more about that?
Yes. So my mom, she was a flower child. She was a wild child. She had two other sons. I have two older brothers. One's 9 years older, one's 11 years older. They ended up living with their dad, and she loved him, adored him, but he was very abusive, and she didn't want to be near the situation. So it just kind of unfortunately worked out where the boys ended up staying with dad because mom liked to, she liked to travel. She got a free spirit. And she ended up moving to Texas, which is where she met my dad. And they were a volatile couple, both in the military, both ranking, both headbutting. And then when she found my stepdad, Dale, it was, he, I still talk to him and he talks about it to this day and he will still get choked up and he's happily married and I love her. But he still gets choked up talking about my mom and the way it went. She went to have a surprise tummy tuck 3 months after they got married and the tummy tuck went very, very seriously south in a hospital in Texas. And my stepdad was a long haul truck driver. And he was across the country, and she thought the best present for her new husband was going to be a brand new body after three kids. And she never left the hospital except in a body bag. The doctor, a gross malpractice that went on. I did end up reading the death certificate, and it was just horrible. He was just beyond grief. He can tell you to this day. X marks the spot. He says, I can tell you to this day exactly when she died, what square block of pavement. And they said, the court said, because he was unfit, because he was a truck driver, and because he was in this state of grief, he couldn't parent. And because the grandparents were elderly, even though, I mean, they took wonderful care of me when he was on the road. They said, well, it's kind of an unfit situation. She needs to be with blood. That's the
Oh,
summary.
Sabrina, thank you for walking with us through that. And remind me what age you were when this was happening. And then if you can pick up where we left off a few minutes ago. So now you're removed from the home and you're off in this weird situation. What are you thinking? And what can you tell us about the abuse that you ensued and what are you comfortable sharing there?
So I was five when the courts awarded custody, temporary custody, to the people that ended up adopting me. I still remember the courtroom. I still remember the judge. The judge that was holding my adoption case retired in the middle of my case. So they ended up getting another judge to take over and just kind of like, well, just let her be off to the new family. We ended up moving to, I'll just say, Michigan. And the abuse started almost immediately, sexual abuse from my sister's husband. And it was almost like looking back. It was almost like I was brought into a new family for him, because my sister made it known from the court, sitting in court, that she not only wasn't interested in me, she wanted nothing to do with me, and she has treated me like a discarded piece of trash from the courtroom that I remember being in, with the brown walls and the judge and the paneling and all that. She was writing her grocery list when it was time for awarding custody to me. My now stepmom has told me that she saw it. And from that day on, she has obvious neglect and mental abuse. She once told me when I was 16, "I never wanted you. I never wanted you. And I never loved you. This was all him. He pushed for this. I never wanted you. I just wanted our girl," naming her, who's 3 years my junior. And I was the person, the man that adopted me. I was his little fun toy for 13 years. Well, she
Sabrina,
reminded me how much I was not wanted.
I'm having a hard time gathering my emotions here, because to have somebody, blood, who's supposed to take care of you, and then just allow this to happen for all of this time, and then to top it off with that kind of horrible, just telling you those things, it makes me sick. And I'm quite sure you've probably thought about what would my life have been like had I stayed with Dale. And I
All the
can't
time.
imagine. I'm so sorry that you had to endure all that. And it just blows my mind. And your strength is evident. Just sitting here with you, I can feel it radiating off the screen. Elle, what are your thoughts at this point? I mean, I know you're feeling emotional too. I can see your eyes. So
I think it's supposed to be about the child, right? It's supposed to be about finding proper care, whether that's infant adoption or whatever, however it starts. But for Heidi and I, we were infants, and in that case, family didn't matter, right? Any old arms will do. So it's stranger adoption, and it's just fine. It's fine. It's nothing to see here. With you, all of a sudden, Sabrina, oh, she needs to be with family. She needs to be with blood. She said, who's coming up with these random choices? It's like they're flipping a coin somehow. In my head, that's how I'm seeing it right now. It's just this flip of a coin that, well, this one will try to keep with kin, and these ones, oh, it doesn't matter. I don't even know who's in charge. And then back to Dale and the grandparents you had on that side. Who decides, like, if he was your blood father, a trucker with elderly parents, no one would have said, oh, you're too grief-stricken, you're too. So again, who's making this decision? I would like to wander in to somewhere and just
a
ask.
dark alley. I'll come with you.
Bring a carpet to roll things up in.
Yeah, we can make our own
I
justice.
like this.
Just like
Might be worth that mugshot I don't have yet. Yeah, exactly.
my
Oh.
driver's license always looks like a mugshot anyway.
Yeah,
I
so why not, Elle? No, it's
it
just awful.
blows
You
my
know,
mind.
it blows my mind too, Sabrina. And now, so you're 16, you hear this horrific stuff from your sister. And what I read in your bio is that you felt you had no voice, But when you were 18, you reclaimed your voice. So can you take us to that part of your story? What happens between 16 and 18 and then the freedom, quote, that you experienced thereafter?
When I was, it was prior to 16, I had already knew I'm going to get out of here. Somehow it was the closest analogy that I can make is it was like a prison, because there were expected nights of, we're going to do skibby night on certain nights, we're going to do this and that, and everything was regimented to where there's expectation of being home certain times and certain nights. So I knew it was like the clincher when she said that, I never wanted you, I never loved you, this was all him. She sat on the side of my bed with our knees touching, looking me in the eyes, telling me this. And it was almost like when she was telling me this, like she was looking through me and not at me. And that was the clincher for me that I'm getting out. I'm going to plan my escape. I was already working. He got a mysterious disability that he was fine on at home. And I was bringing in the dough at home as a dishwasher. And I was just saving up. I was saving up all my little pennies. I was planning on what I can take when I make my move. What can I hide under my shirt? What can I tuck in my socks? What can I, you know, as I go to the car to go to work that morning, or, you know, what can I just slide in like under the seat or something where they're not going to find? And slowly over time, when I would take those things to work, the bosses that I worked for, they looked after me. They were ex-cops, and they took, I mean, they were protective. Not only were they my bosses, they were my protectors. And they just let me, you know, sleep at their house sometimes. And if I told the people that I was staying with, I'm going to go stay at my boss's house, then they were fine with that because they're like, whatever. So I would kind of hide some of the stuff at their house. And over time, I got to be 18, and I was like, it's time to do this. By then, I had gotten a new job, but I was friends with both my new boss and my other bosses, and they were helping to collab with my escape. And one day, I just decided, this is it. This is the day. I went to my sister, the younger sister, I guess, my niece, and said, I love you. I'm leaving, and I will try to find a way to get you out, because she was also in the same home with the same kind of abuse. She didn't understand what I meant because she was 15 at the time, and I had not prefaced her with anything. She thought I meant goodbye, I'll see you this evening or something. And I went to work, and it was already prearranged with my boss. I was a daycare teacher. And they already had another teacher take my place. And I already had a friend waiting at the work, and everything that I had stashed to move from this boss to this boss all got put in the car and got in the car, and off I went to the airport. And I had other family members who had already bought a plane ticket for me to fly me out to Colorado to get far, far away from home. So, and when I got to Colorado is when I officially pressed charges.
Wow, Sabrina. Just, it sounds like a movie. And the intelligence of that, because I think a lot of people assume that people that are being abused can just walk away. It is not that simple. You have to emotionally prepare. You have to have somewhere to go. And for you to have the fortitude to initiate all that and to have these people around you willing to provide protection and the steps for you to get out. I can't imagine what that felt like for you after having such a horrible experience with your sister, to be then claimed by all these amazing people that see the worth in you and say, you don't deserve this. We're going to help you get out. I just think that requires a lot of bravery, because sometimes in abusive situations, you don't have enough feeling of worthiness to escape. So, you know, Elle, any thoughts on that before I ask some more questions?
I just think it was so brave, because it is true that it's almost impossible, or it feels like an impossible thing to abuse survivors to leave. That's amazing to me, because especially it's at such a young age. Like, you didn't just wait till you were going to college and use that moment.
Yeah.
The fact that you did
Wow.
it so early.
Yeah.
Just a question. How old was this sister when they took you? What was the age difference?
I'm trying to do birthday math in my head. She's 23 years older than me.
Oh, that's a lot.
Wow.
You know, maturity by then.
Right? Like,
and
I was thinking maybe she took on this child when she was still really young, like only 20 and resentful. And not that that would justify anything.
No, no, no,
just
no,
the immaturity of it would
it
make
just makes it worse that she was older to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sabrina, now I need to dive into, because I just feel like you were a phoenix and you rose from the ashes. And now you have these wings, right? That you've never had before. What are you doing with them? I mean, to be 18, it's loaded anyway. But now you have this freedom. And I don't know, my gut is I feel anger for you. Like, what were your emotions and how are you processing what was behind you and how are you processing what was in front of you? I'm just curious how that all melded together.
When I got to Colorado and I was with other family, and I actually got to sit with my emotions and lay down and cry at night with my emotions, and I was a heavy journaler, and honestly I wanted to kill them.
That's fair.
Both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that their biological daughter was still in that. No, she did not have as much as I did, because she and I actually continued a relationship. We didn't talk for like 15 years. And then out of the blue on Facebook, we found each other a few years ago. And then we kind of talked, and then we got each other's phone numbers, and then we talked, and we just kind of hashed things out. I mean, over and over. And she said that it was very clear. She apologized to me. She says it was very clear that I was the favorite, and she was always the favorite. Like, it was always made known, because she was the biological daughter. She was clearly the favored one by the sister woman that adopted. They made me call them mama. And I can't even say this word, but PA is what I had to call him. And I can't say that word to this day. I cannot. But she apologized to me that this happened from her parents, and she said that she did endure some trauma, and I witnessed some things. I witnessed her getting violated by his best friend in the house, because he had a best friend who was also a pedophile, who served jail time for being a pedophile, and I witnessed him violate her. And I brought it up to, sorry, this is a segue. I brought it up to my sister, the woman that raised me, that I told her, I was like, hey, so-and-so is in the living room. And she's like, just mind your business. Just stay in here and just mind your business. That's how protective of a mother she was. She just wasn't, not even of her own daughter. So hearing that come from this little girl, to me, their own biological daughter, that they did these things to her, I knew when I got to Colorado, of what little I knew then as an 18-year-old girl, I still had to find a way to get her out. I never was able to, but I had a lawyer. I talked to the lawyer. I had a lawyer in Colorado and I had a lawyer there in that state that was like appointed. And they said there's really nothing that they could do about it. They already did a welfare check and everything seemed fine, as it always does. So there's nothing they can do to get her out. So I just had to sit with the fact, feeling guilty, that should I have taken her with me? Should I have risked the kidnapping chances? just to get her out. So I never did. I've talked to her about it and I've apologized for it. And it's, she says that she doesn't blame me for it, but I went on a mission to see what I can do to hurt them, which I never followed through with, thank God. I put a restraining order on them. Charges did get filed, and he is registered, a registered sex offender, and she got charged with aiding and abetting because she would watch sometimes. With her little, he would tell her to get a little notebook and pen and take notes. And yeah, once I got to Colorado, I had to go back out in hiding because my lawyer told me you need to find somewhere safe to stay for a few months because he was just pulled by the police driving erratically. When they pulled him over, he had a loaded handgun in the front seat of his car and he was coming out to either kill me or could bring me back. And kill the people who were harboring me.
Serena, this is, I have so many things I want to say, but the first thing that stands out to me is you and this other child in this situation feeling such responsibility for it and apologizing to each other for other people's evil, for having to take on the responsibility of trying to save someone when you're trying to save yourself. And the weight of that psychologically, it just, it's huge. And I don't think people really appreciate that, that you were actually, both of you, trying to take on an adult role in this situation. And the fact that you're finally, quote, free, and that this predator is still out there creating an unsafe feeling for you. It just, I can understand why you would plot to want to hurt them because you want the pain to stop. Elle, anything about that? Because, man.
Well, I just think about, again, things being done supposedly for the in the best interest of the child. And adoption, that's all I can speak to. I can't speak to the foster system or anything like that. That is not anything that I know anything about. And I know our countries probably have some different systems and things, but with adoption, there is no welfare check. No one comes by to see if that baby is actually thriving or if this young child is actually safe, or it's just, you know, we hear it all the time, Heidi, when people will, and maybe Sabrina, maybe you did too, when people find out, oh, you were adopted, before they know the whole story. Oh, aren't you lucky? Or wasn't that nice of them to take you in? Or all these things. Meanwhile, the abuse that can happen in a situation where there is no welfare check, where no one comes by. It's just, it's done. You're in a safe family now. And that is so often not true, you know?
That's so true, Elle, because I think, you know, Sabrina, you were saying that somebody did come by to check, but then people can act like everything is okay. A lot of times these welfare checks are known and you can prepare and everybody cleans up and it looks great. So
even perpetrators usually know the right answers to give, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so even if we have welfare checks, are they really, is the question. It sounds like no to me for sure. So you're in this situation, you're talking to your sister, you guys have rehashed everything. I can't imagine the pain and the healing that happened in that, Sabrina, just to be able to connect with her, that shared history, even though it was awful, just to be able to communicate it to each other. So how did you move on? Because what you said in your notes is that you felt you had no value, that you had no voice, but then you found your voice. And that's what I really want to focus on. Like, how did that happen given the devastation of what happened previously?
One of my outlets since I was 10 years old, all the way through today, has been writing. I love to write. I'm working on, as probably most adoptees are, working on a book, trying to tell my story and the most safe way possible because they're still alive. And I write my feelings out. I write fictions. I do other things. I've never been published. I'm just kind of a wannabe writer. On top of that, I've been to therapy since just about the day I landed in Colorado. I believe in therapy. I believe in I take medication. I take anti-anxiety medication because my anxiety just kind of goes through the roof sometimes, and I can't handle my emotions. Still processing it. I'm going to be 40 this year, and I'm still sometimes feel like I'm back in that, 10-year-old girl's body. Or it's, I pray. I believe that. I believe in God, and I believe that, I can pray, and I have a very, very supporting husband. He's absolutely beyond my wildest dreams. He's so supportive. Whether I feel like I need to, go back to counseling, or whether he just wants to sit and let me cry and talk. It's been really helpful having a supportive community, and wherever I've been, and I've moved around a lot, and half of the moving has been running. Is I find a little community and I stick with them, and I find a community that has my back. And I have found that again here amongst my many moves. So yeah.
Wow, that's powerful. And I can't emphasize enough that writing for a lot of us, artwork, expression, that's the only place we can put our voice because no
Yes.
one's listening. So,
Yes.
and I think what you write has so much value. And I know you had something, Sabrina. Can you tell us more about the book, like the cons? I mean, what would you be willing to share anything about what you're working on? You don't have to, but I would love to hear more.
It is going to be a fictional biography. I'm going
Ooh.
to, it's my life, but I'm going to step outside of me and fictionalize things. So they can't be traced, but my story gets told, and there will be pseudonyms. So my purpose in this is twofold. It's for my own therapy to get it out. It's real. I need to face it. And I want this to help people, because every time I hear somebody say, "That's so cool, you were adopted," that just tells me there's not enough information out there. There's not like a public adoption broadcasting system that says, "These are the real facts, these are the real feelings, these are the real transitional moments and processing, and this is how adoptees are at the." There's so much abandonment that goes with it. There's so much, feeling lost and where do I belong? And I'm hoping this will be used to, be like, oh my gosh, I am not alone in this. Because this comes with so much isolating feelings. I am not alone. People get me. And there is a community out there. And, maybe wow, what a story, but I could wow, what a story, other people's stories too.
Your voice deserves to be heard in this way, and I do believe it can help others because we're becoming our own broadcasting system, and pretty soon we're going to be too loud. And I've even seen in the short amount of time that we've been doing this, the growth and the wave coming. It's like we're done now. We're going to start speaking up, and I think everybody's voice added just creates volume, and so I'm just, it takes a lot of courage to write down your feelings and express them in this way, and then be willing to be vulnerable enough to share them. So I think that's amazing. Elle, I know you've used writing too. So what's your encouragement for Sabrina?
Oh God, I just keep writing. But also, I love the idea of fictionalizing a story because I think it can feel a little safer, perhaps. Somebody might think that, but I think it actually broadens the readership rather than everything. Not that there's anything wrong with actual autobiographies. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just sometimes people read those and are like, well, that was interesting, but it doesn't really apply. But sometimes when it's in a story, there's little bits here and there that in the narrative that really hit. And it just broadens the readership, I think, and gets people
Yeah.
thinking. So I love that.
I love it too. And Sabrina, I'm all about spontaneity, so you can cut me off if you want. But do you have a little blurb you could share, like a couple sentences? Come on now, girl. Come on.
Sure. Read the opening paragraph. Calculating the less risky option was always the end goal until this moment. The danger now seemed to be tempting me beyond any instincts instilled to protect me from times like this. I'm so glad I didn't listen. Freedom was so close. I've craftily honed quiet stepping and controlled breathing my whole life for exactly this moment.
Lovely. I think
Wow.
Thank you.
the hypervigilance that so many of us grow up with, whether so there's this quote, and I don't know because I'm not a morning person, and I know it's not that early, but you know, for me, so I'm not sure, I might mess it up, but it goes something like, all violence is abuse, not all abuse is violence. And so, whether the abuse was very obvious, like in your situation, that obvious verbal abuse, the obvious sexual abuse of a child, or whether it is emotional and gaslighting and, you know, all those different things, and that create in so many adoptees. And again, I know it's not exclusive to adoptees, but the hypervigilance that so many of us live with because we don't feel safe for fill in the blank reasons, that calculating moment of when you can get out is a really powerful moment.
Absolutely. And Sabrina, the way that you wrote that, I need you to say the one line again about the breathing, please, because
Yes.
I've never, the way that you wrote that, it hits differently. It's just, can you read that again, please? That was just so powerful.
Yes. I've craftily honed quiet stepping and controlled breathing my whole life for exactly this moment.
I just, audience, I want you to just sit with that for a second. That is everything right there. Just not even be able to take in a breath that would sound like anything. To have to minimize and be that quiet to survive. Well, Sabrina, I just hope you are deep breathing now and yelling. That is my hope for you. Thank you for sharing
you.
that. You are a brilliant writer, and I'm really excited
Thank you.
to see where you go from here.
Thank you.
So I'd like to go back to Dale, this man who loved you so much. And I wonder what you can tell us about the relationship that you had and how this has affected him. If you think he doesn't mind you sharing.
I know he wouldn't mind. We have, when I left home, I found them again because, of course, I was cut off from all communication, everything from my past, from clothes to people. When I found him again, and I finally saw him and his wife, Donna, I know she wouldn't mind. It's Dale and Donna. They're just the loveliest people. I have told them, and I tell on my Facebook. Every year, April 22nd is my freedom day. April 22nd, 2003 is when I left. And April 22nd, 2003 is when I also announced who is and should be my real dad and who is like the most motherly mother that I could have ever dreamed of if I couldn't have my own. And Dale and Donna fits the picture and he walks me down the
Sabrina, you're killing me.
aisle.
Amazing.
That's the kind of
Sabrina.
relationship we have. He
Yeah.
is my dad, my daddy, my everything. And I was so honored when he walked me down the
Like, how paint the scene for us, you know, where
aisle.
were you? I just visualize you in the dress and
It was at a beach hotel because I live on the beach. And it was just a magical day, and he was just so proud. And the father-daughter dance, and I get a little iffy around father-daughter stuff, but man, with him, all the fears and all the icky just goes away. He is just my everything.
I just think it's so extraordinary that after this long separation, that you were able to come back together and have these moments, and that you continue to have a relationship with him.
Yes.
That's so spectacular, Sabrina. I just love that so much. Oh my goodness. So you're going to be 40. I have boots that are 40, so let's not talk about that. But one of the things you were saying that you want are answers. So I'd love to, we have a little bit more time on the interview because that seems like it's the next step in your healing, if I'm not wrong. The answers. What are the answers that you are seeking, and what are the barriers that you're experiencing in that search?
I would like for the state of Texas to become a more adoptee friendly state. I don't understand how grown adoptees can't have access to their own information. So that's one of my number one questions that I have is why? And why can't I get a hold of it and get these people's names off my birth certificate and put my biological parents back on? I have seen my actual birth certificate. The people that adopted me, they had a file and they kept all of my stuff, my mom's handwritten letters to me and the boys. She had lots, she loved to handwrite letters. My actual birth certificate was there with my little footprint when I was born. But since I left in kind of one of those circumstances, and I was 18, I didn't think to take my birth certificate. I thought to take of what is essential to get me from A to B. And so I want my birth certificate back with my biological parents. I want, for me, it's a lot of legal stuff. It's a lot of legal answers, court stuff. Why aren't we heard as adult adoptees? I just can't wrap my brain around it. Of course, I, like all of us, have questions about, genetics and all the things that we maybe cannot have answers to, other than maybe biologic, what are those, DNA tests. But for me, it's just mostly legal stuff. I feel like, I have a son now. I have a 3-year-old son, and he's
Oh,
just the joy of my
congratulations.
life. He's gonna be 4 next month. I'm not gonna cry.
Oh, Sabrina. Mama. Our kids do that.
Oh
Oh.
my goodness. But I know he's gonna have questions and the whole family tree thing. And I watched your thing from two years ago, and I remember you saying that, we're not here to compare painful experiences because people are always trying to, compare. I have this one lady at work that she was so fascinated with my story, what little bits I'll share. She's like, "Oh, well, my trauma doesn't compare to your trauma." I'm like, "Whoa, we aren't
Full
comparing
stop.
anything here." Yeah. I want people to be more informed in the public about adoption education. Why is there not like adoption education in some kind of public forum other than learning it from a traumatized adoptee? Why is there not like maybe just a course you can take in high school? Why is there not, something you can take in college? Why is there not more public information out there? So not only can you be informed if you're interested in adopting, so you can understand what future traumas may lie ahead, so you can prepare this child in the best, most helpful way possible. But you should be able to find out as an adoptee how to get information on the back end. I mean, from both spectrums, I don't understand why there's not more information. And that's a soapbox. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little
Oh,
elated.
Sabrina, you
Oh,
are on
that's a
my
soapbox.
soapbox. Oh no,
Just
you
on
can
that
have.
soapbox with me. I just got to say, I'm so there with you with all of these questions because people, we were talking just a little bit ago about when people say, "Oh, you're so lucky," or "You should be grateful," all the things that we hear. There's also all the things that we hear about, well, it doesn't matter who you're placed with, that's your family or whatever. Well, you had a dad. So if that was the case, that kinship didn't matter, like as far as blood, then they should have left you with him. Meanwhile, you know, there's just all these conflicting things. And then we try to get information, like you said, and oh, no, can't do that. The adopted child, I'm like, so I'm 50, actually, you know, and I get that. I want my biological parents on my birth certificate as well. But we've done an interview before where someone had to be readopted by her birth mother. And so she did it because that's how she could do it and get back onto her so-called truthful tree. Ugh. But it's ridiculous that you have to be readopted. Like, I just think this is so weird, and people don't seem to understand how strange a space it is to live in.
Yeah, Elle, I couldn't agree more. And Sabrina, you advocating for this is very important. That is the message we're trying to send on our platform as well.
Yes.
In fact, last night I was digging through something and I came upon one of my legal documents that was a introductory order of adoption. And this was just a paper. It wasn't anything non-identifying, but in the back of the paper, this is what it read. Therefore, hereafter, the said child, me, will assume and bear the name of Heidi Joy Hamilton. So there is a moment where they took my name, my given name, and now I'm this. And that felt, reading it and having it signed by the doctor who sold me, it just, no wonder they don't want us to see this stuff, you know?
Yeah. Oh, Heidi, I was looking at my papers. We sound like puppies. Pedigree dogs or whatever, right? Which is also kind of dodgy, right, Sabrina?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I was looking at mine, and mine was through the court, so it was the judge. And I won't use the last name, but it said my name that I was given at birth, Catherine Marie, is now this other name. And she now belongs with the fill in last name. I was like, wow. And so now I'm just different. That's not who I am. Meanwhile, a while ago, I was talking to a friend who was out visiting, who is an adopted person. And at one point he said, I'm actually, and he gave his name that he was given. And so even that sort of wording, to know that we live in this weird liminal space of who am I really? I am this person. I was that. I had this name. Now these people are on my birth certificate. She's a sister. She's not my mother. It is so weird. I have a question that I just want to throw out there. And I have been wondering this for a long time, and whether the adopting parents, you know, in whatever situation, Sabrina's, she didn't want you and they should never have left you there. In other situations where people say, we really want this child or what have you, would you have cared for me, or would you care for a child if you couldn't cut me off from who I am biologically? Would you care for me if you couldn't be on my birth certificate? Or is there an ownership thing here, really, when it comes down to it?
Yeah, because, I felt the same way. In fact, one of the lines in my book that I'm writing speaks of that. And it's more like,
if you can read it.
Yeah.
I remember feeling, I'm trying to get to that one part, but I remember feeling when I finally got to the house that I was going to be at with the people that ended up adopting me, and it was almost immediate that she just started getting rid of all my things that I knew. I had a lace parasol, I had a cabbage patch, I had all these things. I remember feeling, even though I didn't know these grown-ups in my life, I didn't know why I was there, feeling at 5 years old, that I felt like a piece of property.
Yeah.
Because going into this I didn't, when I was probably a young teenager, they reminded me, we had to pay so much money for you. And I think it was like $22,000 we paid for you. And this was, I mean, I was probably 12, 13 years old when they told me this. And I'm just kind of reading that part. And I just seeing here, I was a little girl, even aware that I was bought with a price. And never did I realize as a little girl that that price meant more of a monetary value and a brag instead of like an investment as a person, as someone that we cherished. It was more like just minimizing my actual dollar value because they would throw that in my face from time to time.
Sabrina, that's so, it's shocking. And I think a lot of adopted people have felt that. And what comes with that is obligation.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I feel you on every level. I think that what you're saying, the public does need to understand and see the corruption that is involved in the industry as well, and that we need better practices. And we all just have to scream at the top of our lungs about this, and sharing our stories in this way is really important. And as we start to come closer to the end here, Sabrina, I wanted to talk about your finding your voice, your writing. Where are you at this point in time? Because the legal challenges are no joke. You may not have those answers by the time you're 40. And I see what you're trying to do. And it's so important is to reclaim something of yourself if you get that, and being able to put on your document the people that you really want on there. Mm-hmm. How are you grappling with all of this at this moment?
It's definitely a day by day thing. Writing this story, it's making me face a lot of my questions that I have. It's making me kind of see things you can't just see things, you know, subjective anymore in the little girl lens. Sometimes you have to reach outside, and if you can, if that opportunity avails itself, what was the objection in that decision? Why is there another side to the story that maybe I'm not understanding? So I'm having to come to that, to where I'm not just, oh, I would just want to write this from a victim's perspective. I'm trying to see, even in all the terrible ways that I was raised, it's like there got to be a justification for some things. And so I don't know if I'm like trying to excuse them. This is where I'm at. I don't know if I'm trying to, if it's just part of the healing process. I don't know if I'm trying to give them a leg up. I don't know what it is, but I'm trying to realize there had to be another side of the story that I wasn't told. Of course, I have no communication with them. I have it since the day I left. Well, this is probably a week after I left home. I called them and I was in the police station. They're like, just ask them these questions. And I was like, whatever. That's the last time I talked to them. I guess I'm trying to see if is there a grander picture than just my little lens, you know?
I think
sometimes. But there's like nobody to ask.
Sorry, I wanted to throw in here. I think sometimes we go through a stage, or maybe stages, maybe it cycles around several times, I don't know, of make this make sense, right? Can someone make this make sense? And that's to me what it sounds like you're doing, make this make sense.
Yeah.
I'm not sure any of it will ever make sense.
That's true.
Or any
it's
of
just
us.
Just like grasping for the answers that we know we'll never find, just for closure, maybe.
Yeah. This has to make sense. And yet often it just doesn't. I'm not saying you shouldn't keep looking.
Right.
It just feels like that's the space that you're describing. And I think so many people who aren't a part of this adoption constellation, in particular, aren't adopted people, don't understand that weird liminal space again of, mm-hmm. of trying to make sense of what is going on. You know, this friend I told you about who told me their real name, like, this is who I really am. And yet this is who I am now. You know, I mean, we're both in our 50s, but there is in that conversation, there was also the comment by them, no one else gets this. No one else ever understands this. Except, they were like, except you. Well, because I'm also an adoptee. And so, Sabrina, like you said, this isn't the Trauma Olympics. But
exactly.
Your situation was horrible. And yet there are points of it that I totally relate to as well. You know, the making yourself small to tiptoe around until you can leave, all those different things. I think we are the only ones who get it, which is why it's so important that we keep having these conversations.
Absolutely, yeah. Elle. And Sabrina, to speak to your, what I call discovery phase, it's very, in my mind, finding out the truth, whatever that looks like, is your right. And what you do with that truth is your right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I understand what you're saying, because sometimes we need to know the other side of the story. What is the historical path that the people that came to abuse us or came to love us went on? What
yeah.
is that thread of trauma that they're bringing to us? So then you can sit back and you can say, okay, what happened isn't okay, but now I see, oh, that's why, because they were abused, and then that transferred through generations. And I do believe that can be really painful to uncover, but it's also a part of your story, and it can take a lot of it off of you when you can look and say, okay, that person's just effing crazy. And I mean, that's a really small generalization, but that's pretty much what I say on my family tree. Effing crazy, effing crazy. So I just want you to know that, encourage you to do what feels right and to continue to try to find those answers and to reclaim yourself. And you're doing that. Sabrina, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you think is important? Are there any messages that you want to send to people that might be in a similar situation? We are talking to people all over the world who are in deep pain and confusion, who are stronger than any group, not to be preferential, but I just feel that this group is trying so hard to find identity and care so deeply about others doing the same. And also to any adopted parents or parents that are hoping to adopt, or biological parents who are relinquishing or have relinquished, what do you want to express to them that maybe we haven't yet?
To the adoptees, your story and all of its flaws and mystery and trauma, it's still beautifully your story. It can help someone. And we all think we're alone, but oftentimes in pain, that's where we find our community. And I think that's what brings all this together, and all of the seeming isolation. We're still unified in this, even though we might be, you know, geographically separated, so we think, some adoptee could be next door. Maybe we need to be more communicative about it via our social media or whatever, be more open and intentional instead of just reclusive, because I myself am the number one recluse.
And I'm number two then.
Intentional.
Number three. Well, there we go.
Here, we're repping.
to the people looking to adopt, please educate yourself. Please talk to adoptees. Please see what maybe could have been done, what needs we have. There are adult needs that we wish were met as a child that could have helped formed us into a more rounded human being, instead of just you have a 1,000-piece puzzle, but you have 30 pieces missing. It's not complete. Help us fill in the puzzle pieces where you can. Stop leaving it shrouded in mystery. You're doing more damage than good. We need to know who we are. We do have an identity outside of your paperwork.
Amen.
And what about biological families that are relinquishing, or?
I feel strongly about this, so I will try to keep this brief.
That's okay. We want to hear your opinion.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because I come from, I had a stepdad who should have. Blood is not the ruler. Blood is not the end all be all. If there is love, absolute unconditional love from, be it a family member by blood or an affiliate who could just give this child unbelievable love. As cheesy as this sounds, love wins because blood is not always the answer. I think it should be a consideration to not pull the child from the family. But if research has been done via the caseworkers and the judge and the guardian ad litem and the people who are working for the child, if the research has been done, then it will say this family is healthy for this child, or maybe this isn't the right fit because the child has to come first. Blood is not always the answer.
I
Yes.
could not agree with you more. And I think if we're sending that message as adopted people, and I will stand with you shoulder to shoulder here, Sabrina, because I think there's so much pushback and we want to blame just because it's easier, right? It's a little less complicated if we can just point and say, well, it's because of that or it's because of that. But it's way more complicated than that. And just because you share the same blood, that abuse happens severely in those situations. So
Yes.
I think, like Elle has said too, we need a more child-focused solution. And there has to be a process, just like you said. All right, let's start with blood family. Is there anybody capable of giving this child what this child needs? Okay, that doesn't work. And like you said, having investigations and all of these things, that is really the wish. That each child would get that kind of love and attention so they can end up getting the love that they deserve, whether that be from, blood relatives or not, so that they can thrive. And you're living proof of that through
Yes.
Dale and Donna. And thank you, Dale and Donna. Nice job.
Aw.
Elle, are there any thoughts you have for Sabrina as we wrap it up?
Well, I just think it's so interesting how reactions do swing wildly, from one extreme to the other. And no, of course, not staying with blood doesn't always mean that's the answer. Because you're right, biological children are abused or neglected or whatever in their own families. Now, statistics show that it is worse without, that biological component. But that doesn't mean it never happens in the other. I mean, clearly, children are abused or neglected in all sorts of situations. But what I found so interesting is that you were with a dad, your stepdad, who knew your mom, who could have kept you connected to her memory, who would have, in any other situation, we don't take a child away from a loving father when mom has died. This makes no sense. Again, these wild swings from this choice to that about what's best for a child by people who aren't really doing their due diligence. I'm just going to throw it out there. And then we grow up like property. Like you said, this is how much we paid for you, which we get thrown in our faces from, again, both sides. Either this is what you owe us because we paid for you, or look how much we loved you by how much we paid for you. Like you said, people need to know the whole story.
Yeah, and Sabrina, you've done such a beautiful job of communicating and I'm just really grateful for your presence and I can feel like your energy. You're so strong. I can't wait to read your book. And just
Thanks.
know that this meant a lot to us, and I know a lot of people out there will be deeply affected and moved by your story. So thank you so much for being here, Sabrina, and thank you, Elle.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for letting me be here too. Thank you, Sabrina.
Thank you for listening. We hope it meant something to you. Tell us your story, learn more about our mission, and support the podcast at www.pulledbytheroot.com.